Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fulbright Arctic Initiative overview for interested applicants. Before we get started, we're going to do a quick sound check. If you are able to see the screen and if you're able to hear me, please type in the chat box. Okay, great. Looks like you can hear me and you found the chat box, which is great. This is also where you'll be able to type in your questions throughout the webinar. Great. So also just to remind you that we have two methods of listening today by either computer or telephone. Make sure that your speakers are turned on if you're listening by computer. If you'd like to listen by telephone, you can select the phone call option from the module on your screen and enter the information provided in your registration confirmation email. My name is Susan Mundell. I'm the Assistant Director for Fulbright Student and Scholar Multi-Regional Programs at IIE, and I'm joined today with my colleague Steve Money, who's at the U.S. Department of State. I will turn it over to Steve to introduce himself and then move forward. If I can, here you go.
Hi everyone, it's good to be with you. Thank you for today. We're excited to talk about the third round of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, which has been a dynamic and productive component of the Fulbright program since it launched during the U.S. Chairmanship of the Arctic Council in 2015. So thank you for being here, and we look forward to talking to you. I'll start off with a little background. You may know a little bit about the Fulbright program, but the Fulbright program is one of the State Department's oldest and largest people-to-people exchange programs, and it's the flagship educational exchange program of the U.S. government. It supports study, research, and teaching by over 8,000 participants each year. It operates in over 160 countries, and next year, 2021, will be the 75th anniversary of the program, so it has a long history and an outstanding record of academic achievement and international collaboration that has been supported through this program. The Fulbright program is supported financially by the U.S. government and other governments around the world, including our partners in the Arctic. And it's the funding partnerships that the State Department has with partner governments, as well as private sector and universities, that really make Fulbright a global partnership. And that makes it the perfect forum, we think, to bring together some of the best minds to study our shared challenges in the Arctic and find some practical solutions. Next slide. The Fulbright program is committed to diversity in all of our programs. We want the participants in this program to represent the United States and all of the Arctic countries and all of their diversity. And this is the core value of Fulbright. So we just wanted to reiterate that. As I said, the Fulbright program funds over 8,000 awards annually for both American participants and participants from around the world. It's open to students, scholars, researchers, teachers, artists, professionals, and all those categories are really welcome in the Fulbright program. This particular program is a scholar program. It's for scholars, researchers, professionals, practitioners with expertise and interest and experience in the Arctic. And the participants in this program will join a global network of over 390,000 alumni who have participated in the program since 1946. The Arctic Initiative, next slide, is really kind of a different model for Fulbright in that it's multilateral, involving all eight Arctic Council member nations. It's multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary. It's interactive and responsive to communities and policy priorities in the Arctic. It is a really It has a focus on applied research and policy-relevant research that can be useful to international, national, and local policymakers in the Arctic and to communities. It strives to work with Arctic communities and be responsive to the needs and interests of Arctic communities, and that's why it has a real strong public outreach component as well. It's focused on producing some tangible products and outcomes that include some original research that is driven and focused on practical policy recommendations. Participants in the Fulbright Arctic Initiative attend conferences and workshops. They use the funding they obtain through the Fulbright grant to leverage funding from home institutions, from grant-making organizations. They engage in real proactive community engagement. And the length of this program is 18 months, but from what we've seen in the first two cohorts of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, it leads to some long-lasting networks and ongoing collaborations. Next slide, we'll talk a little bit about Fulbright Arctic Initiative 3. As I mentioned, the Fulbright Arctic Initiative was initially started under the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council in 2015. That initial cohort of 17 scholars was such a success that it was renewed for a second round, and now we are on to the third round. And what we're really hoping to do is continue to build a network of internationally linked cross-disciplinary scholars to stimulate international collaboration on Arctic issues, to work together collaboratively on public policy research questions that's driven by the needs and concerns of Arctic nations and communities. For the third round of the Arctic Initiative, I'm happy to introduce two new scholars who are going to be leading this effort and providing intellectual leadership, mentorship for participants, and facilitating the discussion and collaboration among the group as a whole and the working groups within the initiative. And those two scholars, I'm proud to say, are both alumni of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, and we're glad that they have joined us to continue to build this network. And I'll introduce them now and let them say a few words about themselves. The first scholar is Dr. Greg Peltzer of the University of Saskatchewan, and the second is Dr. Beth Rink of Montana State University. So I think their selection really shows the international aspect of this program, the fact that we have a Canadian and American leading this. They're both from very different disciplines, but both have a lot of experience and a strong connection to the Arctic. So I'm going to turn it to Greg first to introduce himself.
Howdy, and thanks very kindly, Steve and Susan, and I'm really excited to be working with Beth on Fulbright Arctic Initiative 3. And something some of you are going to hear time and time again, especially from me, when they talk about the Fulbright program being something that's one of the usually a highlight in many scholars' careers and can be a career changer and life changer, it is simply no exaggeration. This is a fundamentally remarkable opportunity, and we're thrilled that there's so many people who are interested in following up the Arctic Initiative 3. I just got back from Inuvik this weekend up in the Northwest Territories in the visiting the Gwich'in communities, and they're fully aware of this program and are very keen to be hosting the next cohort as part of the kickoff to Fulbright Arctic Initiative 3. Here in at the University of Saskatchewan, and it's a place where we get 5 months of winter, and winter's still hanging on. So I'll turn it over to Beth.
Hi, everybody. I'm Beth Rink, and I'm a professor of community health in the Department of Health and Human Development at Montana State University, and I was a scholar in the second cohort. And I want to echo what Greg has said about this program really being a game changer for your career. wherever you are in your career, whether you're an early investigator in the middle of your career or a senior scholar, it really does up the ante as far as your abilities to do interdisciplinary work. And I think one of the best teachings that I got from my experience in the cohort was really learning how to do interdisciplinary collaborative work. We hear a lot about that we need to do it, and we hear a lot about what it is, but actually doing it and learning how to work with other people who have different points of view and different training to really come up with innovative research and policy is a whole other ball of wax, as we say in the U.S. So this initiative really helps to do that. And I'm certainly super excited to work with Greg, who was from the first cohort, and Steve and Susan are wonderful. So we're all very blessed that they will be with us in the third cohort. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg and Beth. And we're excited to see this third round of the initiative under your leadership. I do want to turn just to a few sort of nuts and bolts about this program and how it works. Because it is an unusual model for Fulbright, it's an 18-month program that will kick off with an opening meeting of the full cohort of scholars. In that 18 months, the full group will meet three times in person at three meetings at the beginning, midpoint, and end that will be convened and sponsored by Fulbright. Over the course of 18 months, each participant will conduct an individual Fulbright research exchange visit in another country that will be from a minimum of 1.5 months or 6 weeks up to a maximum of 3 months. And throughout the 18 months, there will be ongoing virtual and in-person collaboration among the working groups that will be led and coordinated by Greg and Beth. And the group of scholars will be multidisciplinary, but all of the work will focus on three core research themes that are listed here, and those are Arctic security and cooperation, Arctic infrastructure in a changing environment, and community dimensions of health. And Greg and Beth, I'm going to turn it back to them to talk a little bit about those themes and how they were developed and why they are important topics at this time to focus on, and how they see some of the research that could fall within those themes.
Perfect. So there's a kind of a two dimensions to the themes that I think Beth really points out often, and this is the point where there's a major theme when you're thinking about your application and kind of your secondary theme. So among those three themes, thinking about the area that you'd want to make your most significant contribution or where your primary interest lies, but we also want to make sure, and this is to pick up on what Beth said earlier, that it is interdisciplinary, and we want to make sure when we have these subgroups of scholars tackling these three particular themes, that there's a very explicit linkages and cooperation between the subgroups, because there'll be typically about five or six scholars in each of these subgroups that are going to be working on group projects and obviously their individual research. So I wanted to put that up. So it's going to be explicitly, we want to make sure that happens in Fulbright Arctic 3. Beth, did you want to start? We can go in reverse order or in terms of the themes. Did you want to talk about the community dimensions of health first?
Sure. So just to give you an overview of how the themes came about, Greg and I and Steve and Susan went through an iterative process where Greg and I put forth some ideas about what some themes would be for the Arctic Initiative 3 program, and that was based on the work of the first cohort that Greg was in and the second cohort that I was in. So we started to review all of the documents and the products from cohort 1 and 2 to contribute to cohort 3. We also looked at the Arctic Council priorities as well as other major groups and participants and players in the Arctic like the ICC. And then we also worked with the other countries, the other Arctic states, to help develop what the themes were. So it was a very inclusionary, iterative process over time to get to the three themes that we developed. So with the community dimensions of health, the focus for that theme is really on community-level determinants of health and what is contributing to health at the community level in the Arctic. We want to get away from focusing on individuals. We obviously all know that individuals are important as it relates to health, but in Arctic communities, there's a focus culturally on the collective and the health of the collective, and we want to start moving the scholarship and the policy in the Arctic on looking at communities and the collective as a whole and not so much focused on individual health. I think throughout all of the themes, there's a major focus on community collaboration and community engagement. That certainly in the community dimensions of health, we want to focus on. The other piece that I think is important to the community dimensions of health is also looking at the systems level and looking at how systems can be enhanced or include more Indigenous knowledge or how services need to be coordinated in the Arctic so that we can help people and get people the access to the services they need, and we need to be focusing on a systems level piece in that space. Greg, you want to do the infrastructure and environmental change?
You betcha. So, and this leads nicely with this focus around communities and systems level. So two things I really want to note about the infrastructure and changing environment theme. One is it's fundamentally meant to be interdisciplinary. So there's going to be parts of it that will look like a great home for people that are in the engineering fields, broadly understood. But it's deadly important that we have people working on this that are hydrologists, climatologists, people that are physical geographers, ecologists, biologists, and both folks that are working on the marine environment as well as on the terrestrial environment, because this interaction of human beings living in place while there is environmental changes occurring and affecting these communities, how do these interplay? And when we're thinking about community-driven solutions and confronting both the opportunities as well as the problems, it's really this community level. What are communities doing to take on new, for example, in the Northwest Territories and in Alaska, new energy, local renewable energy to create greater sustainability, new housing infrastructure. But to come back to this point that Beth just raised about systems, this ties in very closely, of course, to community dimensions of health, types of housing at a community level. Are we getting more secure and affordable and accessible energy? Because those have big factors, of course, on health. And so when you're looking at things like everything from transportation and communication to energy, housing stock, and so on, thinking about these, that we need an all-hands-on-deck type of approach to deal with those, both on the natural sciences, social sciences, and technology and engineering. But how do those relate to other things, especially things like health? I guess we should chat a little bit about the Arctic security and cooperation. This one, Beth and I could share that. Did you want to start, Beth? Sure.
So the Arctic security and cooperation theme is has a focus on governance and addressing complex governance structures in the Arctic. I'm sure for all of you that work in the Arctic know that there are multiple examples of bilateral and multilateral agreements between different countries around resources and services. And so, and it's increasingly becoming more and more important to understand how governance structures work, how they can be enhanced, how we as Fulbright Arctic scholars can influence and recommend policies that can help to strengthen governance structures in the Arctic. So that is somewhat the, that is the foundation of this particular theme, and it also ties nicely with the other two themes because it really is policy and government that make decisions about what is actually going to happen to the environment or to energy or to health. So we really wanted to focus on developing this thematic area of the security and the cooperation.
No, that's exactly it. And you'll see those kind of sub-themes around the Arctic security and within this governance framework that Beth just outlined. Human security, environmental security, energy security, and traditional security. And the last one is, for those of you that are followers of Arctic Council, is not one that's commonly addressed through Arctic Council. It's almost everything but historically. But that is also becoming a priority for consideration by a number of the members of the Arctic family. And especially when we're thinking more broadly, these human security, environmental security, energy security, you just look at the news, what's happening with the 30% fall in oil prices lately, and what does that mean for communities living on the North Slope? You have also long-term countries outside the Arctic that want to be participants in what's going on and what's being said about issues, everything from fisheries to environment, especially for transportation, energy, and so forth. So this governance theme, and keeping in mind that the Arctic has been traditionally one of the most innovative places on the planet in terms of local co-management and international cooperation and paradiplomacy that's occurred among indigenous communities who have been leaders in this for decades, as well as municipalities and then other entities in civil society. So it's looking at that as a mix as we're going into a fundamentally different era in the Arctic.
Thank you. Great event. Susan will take it from here to talk a little more about the program, the application process, and the timeline.
Great. Thank you. So as Steve mentioned earlier, the program takes place over a period of 18 months. And beginning with the opening meeting, there are three in-person group seminars. The first is the opening meeting, which will be taking place in Canada. The midterm meeting is tentatively scheduled in Norway, although that is still to be confirmed. And the final meeting is taking place in 2022 in Washington, D.C. All participants will complete an individual research exchange visit, which is a minimum of 6 weeks and up to 3 months. For our U.S. scholars, their visit will take place in one of the Arctic Council member countries, in either Canada, the Kingdom of Denmark, including Greenland and the Faroe Islands, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, or Sweden. And our participants that are citizens of those countries will complete their research exchange in the U.S. In addition, throughout the 18-month period, there will be virtual meetings, plenary sessions that are regularly scheduled, taking place online under the guidance of our lead scholars. We also expect to share your results of your individual and collaborative research and to produce policy recommendations, at least one group project product, and a one-page description of your individual research project objectives, outcomes, and exchange experience. A little more detail about the individual exchange. As I mentioned, the U.S. scholars will complete them in one of the seven Arctic member countries. Non-U.S. scholars will complete them in the U.S. A letter of invitation is recommended but not required. This is a letter from the host, the potential host in the country. Selected candidates who do not have a letter of invitation at the time the application is due will receive some assistance. So not to worry if you don't have a letter obtained by the application deadline. Okay, a little bit of about eligibility. Successful candidates will be comprised of scholars at all career stages, including applied researchers, professionals, and indigenous and traditional knowledge experts active in the academic, public, or private sectors. Applicants must demonstrate outstanding qualifications and a record of experience and accomplishment in an area clearly related to one of the designated research themes. Be actively engaged in an area of inquiry relevant to the program's themes and objectives. Be open to exploring and incorporating comparative interdisciplinary approaches in their investigations. And be interested in developing collaborative activities with other Fulbright Arctic scholars. We do anticipate that at least four of the scholars will be selected from the U.S., with at least one scholar from each of the other Arctic Council member states. For a full list of our eligibility criteria, you can find it online on our website in the eligibility section. One of the major criteria that I'll just point out and highlight is that the eligible candidates must be a citizen of one of the Arctic Council member states and residing in the country at that time the application is due. Okay, so about the award. The award includes $40,000 to be for the full 18-month period and dispersed in three installments. The award is intended to cover the cost of travel to the in-person group meetings, travel and maintenance for the research exchange visit component, along with covering some research materials and assistance. In addition to this, the accommodations and meals at each of the group seminar meetings will also be covered. We also do provide a limited accident and sickness benefit while on the exchange or participating in the program activities. Next slide. So the application is due for all U.S. applicants, so coming up pretty soon. It will close at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time. All of the applications are submitted online through the Slate application system, and a link to the application is located on the application tab of our website. For non-U.S. applicants, we do advise you to contact the Fulbright Commission or Fulbright office in your home country to find out the specific application deadlines and other application components. Okay, sorry, I'm just going to pause for a few questions that have come in. So I got a question about eligibility. Is it worth it to apply without an MA or a PhD? I'm actually going to turn that one over to you, Steve, if you wouldn't mind answering that question.
Sure. This is a Fulbright Scholar program. So a PhD is recommended but not required. I think it's not required because we recognize that a lot of researchers and experts in the Arctic are not necessarily full-time scholars. There could be people who work in the policy sphere, who work in local governance sphere, who are in traditional local knowledge holders, and that is why the PhD is not required. I think what's more important is a track record of research and scholarship focused on the Arctic or other relevant experience that would prepare a participant to contribute substantively to a collaborative multidisciplinary group research program that's policy driven and be able to contribute to that effort. Greg and Beth, do you want to say anything further on that?
Well, Greg here. Yeah, no, I echo exactly what you said. What's meant to be for traditional scholars that are universities and so on, that's kind of the common and expected qualifications. But it's recognizing that there the expertise and knowledge that we need, especially when we're looking out to both knowledge holders and practitioners, and in some disciplines, of course, a PhD or even a master's for that matter isn't the terminal degree. So we're looking for first-class people, first-class knowledgeable people, not necessarily first-class PhDs.
This is Beth. I agree. It's important to for us to gather a diverse group of intellectual capacity and ways of looking at issues and experience. So that's what's more important than the degree level.
Okay, great. Thank you. We also have a question about eligibility. Can German citizens or U.S. green card holders apply as well?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. Citizenship in one of these 8 Arctic Council member states is required for participants applying in the United States. U.S. required and permanent residency or a green card is not sufficient.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Great. We have some questions about the application, so I will actually just go ahead and talk more in detail about the application components. What is required is an application form, which is to be completed online through the state application system. The project statement, we'll go into this in a little bit more detail in the following slide, but it is the most important component of the application, which really focuses on what you propose to do for the research and how it fits into the thematic working groups. 2 letters of reference are required. Recommenders should address the significance of the proposal to the Arctic Initiative research areas and potential to contribute to Arctic regional and national development. References and language proficiency evaluators, if you are submitting those, are registered directly in the application system so that the recommendation letters and evaluation is submitted directly into your application. In addition, a curriculum vitae or resume is required, which is up to a maximum of 6 pages. A bibliography, which is up to 3 pages. And letter of invitation, which is to come from your potential host for the research exchange visit. And as I mentioned earlier, although it's recommended to submit along with your application, it is not required at the time that it's due. We do ask you within the application to list your potential host. If you have identified an institution that you'd like to work with but have not necessarily received the letter from them. Okay, so the project statement, this is your opportunity to explain your strengths as a candidate to reviewers and potential hosts. It must be persuasive and compelling. Some key points that the project statement should address are how your proposed research is connected to one of the program themes, your ability to perform collaborative research in a multidisciplinary team-based setting, a public policy impact and practical significance of your research, and how you'll integrate public outreach into your individual and team research agenda.
Susan, can I add something?
Yes, I was going to talk about some additional points they should address. Mm-hmm. They should also consider what you propose to do, what's the academic and professional context of the project, why does it need to be done, what significance does it hold for your discipline, your development, and the host country's benefit, what research facilities and resources are found in the host country, how you plan to disseminate your results, how will your collaborative research in the area advance understanding of regional development to improve quality of life in local communities in the Arctic region as a whole? How does your research relate to a secondary thematic area? Being sure to demonstrate the interdisciplinary scholarship of your research, not only within a thematic area, but also across the thematic areas. How will you benefit from and contribute to the goals and objectives of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative? And describing your ability to perform collaborative research in a multidisciplinary team day setting. Beth and Greg, if you could add to that, I'd appreciate it, and also share your tips from your own experience developing your project statements.
Sure. I want to emphasize what Susan said about identifying your primary thematic area and then how your research also may contribute to one of the other thematic areas. That is a new focus for this Fulbright Arctic Initiative third cohort that really is based on the experience that we had in cohort one and cohort two, where not only were the scholars finding it highly productive to work together, but we also were finding linkages in the other groups. And so we, in this third cohort, are going to try and also facilitate the transdisciplinary interactions of the group. So it'll be important for you to highlight that. And I can say from my experience that I was in the Thriving Communities group for cohort two, and we really wanted to be able to collaborate with the other group, but just because of time and focus, we weren't able to, so that by the time the Fulbright program ended, we were ready. And so Greg and I are really hoping to start that transdisciplinary process in cohort three a little bit earlier. I also want to suggest that in your applications and even in your letters of references, you highlight how you make decisions in interdisciplinary groups or experiences you've had with that, and how you resolve conflict and negotiate with others who have different points of view, because you will be working with people that come from a totally different mindset, world, way of thinking, and even though that is very exciting and innovative, it can also be challenging. So the more we understand how you process in your work, the better. That's all I have to say. Greg, do you want to add anything?
Sure. A couple of things. I agree with everything Beth has just said, and I think that's very, very important. And as everybody listening in and on and watching the the webinar knows from listening to Susan and Steve, we're in extremely good hands and hugely grateful, frankly, for the support and guidance that they'll be able to provide throughout the journey. The two things I'd point out is when you're writing your statement, make sure think of it this way in terms of a level of language, cut the jargon out for sure, and focus, write it so that an intelligent 16-year-old or high school student who cares about the area can follow and understand it. So how would you write it that way? Because keep in mind, we're going to be working across disciplines that we know our jargon in our own field, but it's quickly lost when we go across. So when there's going to be an evaluation team, you want to make it easy for people to understand what you're talking about. So never use a $10 word when a $5 word will do. The second thing is to, when you get your letters of reference, make sure it's somebody who knows you and can talk about you. That is much more important than trying to get the most famous person you can think of or have contact with that might know you a little bit, but not well enough. So, and this speaks to Beth's point, really an opportunity for the selection committee to get to know you. So make sure your letters of references are people that can talk to you and know you well. Those are a couple of things I would add.
Great, thank you. So we've got a few more questions coming in. Let's see, first one, this is probably for Beth. Would the community dimension of health component be focused on human health or habitat health or the interaction of the two?
It can focus on any one of those three areas as long as the applicant makes the case for why that's necessary for the Arctic and how and the country that they come from. Like what's the significance of that research if you're just focusing in one or the other of those three areas? I think that a more compelling applicant will be able to address both and the interaction, because like we've highlighted throughout this discussion as well as with the other two cohorts, we're really pushing the edge and on research and policy in the Arctic and really trying to identify new and innovative ways to do research and influence policy. So teaching people and educating people about how to study and address the interactions of multiple different systems and levels is where the provocativeness of the application is in the work.
Okay, thank you. We've got a question about the research exchange visit and whether it can be divided into multiple visits that total 3 months. And the answer is yes, you can propose to split your individual exchange visit into multiple trips, but you must spend a minimum of 6 consecutive weeks on at least one of your visits. The project statement should include a clear and compelling reason why the project needs to be completed over multiple visits.
So I just want to, can I say something?
Please.
I just want to emphasize that 6-week consecutive visit, because that took some of the scholars in my cohort by surprise, even though I'm sure it was somewhere in the application. So how some of us addressed that was we did our 6 weeks and then would go back for shorter visits for those of us that had a little bit more work to do. So it is, as long as you complete your 6 consecutive weeks, there is flexibility as long as you do state, as Susan said, that you have a compelling reason for why your study, your exchange needs to be done in different sections.
Susan, I would add to this too to say that, you know, Fulbright And this initiative, you know, Fulbright is an academic endeavor, but it's also a cultural diplomacy program. It's a people-to-people exchange program. And so the long-term, in-depth experience of living and working in another culture is sort of foundational to Fulbright. And that's why we have the minimum stay of 6 weeks, which is actually shorter than most other Fulbright programs. But it's important from our point of view that Fulbright continue to build deep international linkages. And we have found the only way that can be done is really through long-term, sustained engagement and living in another country, working with international collaborators for a good period of time.
I can't emphasize what you just said, Steve, enough. The longer you're there, the more opportunities. And it's like Woody Allen said, 90% of success is just showing up. And the longer you've shown up, you're going to get way more benefit. And I honestly think where I did my exchange in Alaska, and to emphasize your point, Steve, about the cultural dimension, I probably got as much, or if not more, out of those dimensions with local community leaders, journalists, people working in the business sector, and so on, that I never actually anticipated. But you do a couple of talks and you build a network, and I'll tell you, my understanding of Alaska, albeit it's through Canadian eyes, it is much, much richer than it would have been if I was just meeting with academics on campus for a short period of time. This is one of the massive benefits of Fulbright, and to take full advantage of it. Having said that, I did go to Alaska more than once on my Fulbright exchange, and you will find not only you may need to for your own research, but you'll want to. You're going to make roots in a different way with different folks, not just colleagues, but community members. And so I would budget for and think about doing a couple of trips, but at least one of them a long-haul trip.
Great. We've got a few questions about the letter of invitation and how to go about securing a letter and how to solicit interest from you know, institutions overseas.
You bet. So on that one, don't be shy. So there's going to be countries that you want to study in that you've always wanted to go there, or you know there's some good folks doing some research there, or there's some activity that's happening that you really want. So I'll just make one up. If you're really interested in governance issues and the Secretary for Arctic Council is in Tromsø, Norway, and if you're an American and you want to go to Norway, but you don't know anyone at the University of Tromsø, just go to the website, look up folks that are working in that area or the Secretariat and so on, and reach out. Don't be shy. Say, hey, I'm applying for this Fulbright Arctic Initiative 3. Very keen. This is what I'm thinking about. Or could we do a quick Skype meeting for 10-15 minutes, just to let you know what I'm thinking about and seeing if there's opportunity. 95% of people are going to be more than happy to engage you. And so I would not be shy, honestly, doing cold calls that way. And they get to know you, and it's a great way to break the ice into there. And more often than not, people are very happy to accommodate.
Yeah, and I also want to say that the Fulbright commissions in the different countries can also help. If you contact your Fulbright commission, you can speak with the Fulbright director or anybody in their office about this particular Fulbright call. And they'll also be able to guide you in who to connect with in your countries of interest. And I also, like for my exchange, I reached out to my network. And I did my exchange in Finland. And so through my network of researchers and community partners, that was how I was able to get my letter of support. And I also, this is my perception and maybe my bias too, I think the Fulbright commissions and scholars in the Arctic are all aware of the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, and so I think there's a lot of investment across the Arctic countries to get qualified applicants and to select a very innovative, progressive group of scholars. So reaching out to people for your Fulbright commissions as well as through your professional networks and talking about the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, people are going to know what that is. And they're going to know it's different than the other Fulbright programs.
Great. Okay, we have a project-specific question. Can a project proposal cover an issue in a few of the participating countries as they pertain to Arctic issues and policies, or does it have to be inclusive of all of them? For example, I want to concentrate on Scandinavia. Would that be a sub-theme to the overall initiative?
Oh, that's a great question. So So there's, is this for the individual project or the group project? For the individual project, no problem. It could be a sub-region, it could be a single region or a country, community for that matter. That's perfectly doable, especially for the individual project when you're doing your exchange to do that. The ones that will be the group project will tend to be more pan-Arctic in orientation. So they'll, and you'll have other group members that you'll be working with that will have some expertise or are from places like Russia, Canada, Scandinavia, and the United States. So though the group project will tend to be more pan-Arctic, but the individual project may or may not be. That'll depend very much on the individual's applicant's project.
Yeah, and I agree with what Greg says. Just make sure that you're exchange is in one of the Scandinavian countries, or that your exchange is in one place, at least for those first six consecutive weeks. And like for example, with my individual project, my focus is on reproductive health, and I've always worked in Greenland, but I had no idea what was going on in the other parts of the Arctic related to reproductive health. So I went to Finland to help me understand the Scandinavian system of reproductive health. So I was able to apply what I learned about the Scandinavian countries to what I do in Greenland.
Okay, great. There's a next question we have is about where the exchange can take place. Does it have to be within the Arctic itself? This candidate's interested in Denmark and Greenland, and it seems that they would need to spend time in Copenhagen and Nuuk, for example.
That's absolutely fine. For the American participants, you could go anywhere or to any institution in one of the Arctic Council states. So that could be in Greenland, it could be in Russia, it could be, you know, Toronto, which is not in the Arctic but is in a Arctic Council member state. So that's perfectly fine. And there are a lot of institutions all throughout the Arctic countries where Arctic relevant research is taking place, where there are scholars to collaborate with. So no, you don't necessarily have to be, say, above the Arctic Circle to do this.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate that for scholars coming to America, there are institutions all over the United States and in the lower 48 that do wonderful research about the Arctic. And you can also make the case for why you might want to go to a specific institution that is below the Arctic Circle. So definitely think deeply and broadly about how, like, where you want to go and why. And certainly for people who are interested in Denmark and Greenland, it is applicable to come to Copenhagen because so much of the work that happens in Greenland is focused in Denmark. And then definitely also Nuuk is the capital of Greenland, so it would make sense that a scholar might also spend time there. So that does logically make sense.
Okay. Great. We are just about coming up to the top of the hour. So I'm going to move on. I know we didn't get a chance to answer all of your questions, but I do want to let you know how you can get in touch with us. Please, for any unanswered questions or any remaining questions, please send an email to arctic@iie.org. You can also go to our website at cies.org/arctic to find out more information. We've got a whole section just on FAQs. We've got the timeline and, of course, the full list of eligibility criteria, as well as the application instructions for both U.S. scholars and non-U.S. scholars, and a link to the application for both U.S. scholars and a link to the visiting scholar application. You can also follow us on social media. If you'll see our handles up there on the slide. And you can also join myfulbright@cies2.org to find out more information about the Fulbright programs and get updates. Thank you very much. Special thank you to Beth and Greg, our fearless leaders on this initiative. And Steve Money, thank you so much for taking the time to share the sponsors' overview of the program and priorities. We look forward to receiving your applications, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Greg and Beth.
Thank you.